live this here lifestyle. I do. I got something in my fucking eye. This here lifestyle. Wait a minute, man. Okay. Jesus Christ. That fucking John Jerryman character with John Jettyman. I guess we're going to call him Jerryman. Even though it says Jettyman here. John Jerryman, I think. He's a popular. He's gotten popular. And he's based on... The singing style is based a little bit on a character that I saw on a Laurel and Hardy in a show called in a two-reeler called Blotto. And they go to a club, a BYOB kind of a place. Well, it's not really, because I think it's still Prohibition. I'm not sure. I think the Prohibition is still in effect, because they have this bottle of booze that they think it's a bottle of booze. It's actually tea. But anyway, they stole it from Stan's wife, and now they're in this club, and they order seltzer. You know, and they're going to get hammered. But their actions bespeak, like, they're trying to hide it. So, anyway, this dude comes over to their table while they're loading up these drinks. You told me that you cared for me. It was one of those old school kind of 1920s singers. And I can't even believe that, you know... I think I've heard recordings of people. This guy's, and I believed in you. You know, so that's who that guy was based on. Anyway, I gotta find that. That's the ache of a broken heart. Let's see. I can find this real fast for you. What? What is this shit? What, YouTube kids? I think this is it. Wait a minute, man. You told me that you cared for me. Where is it, man? This isn't it. This is just the nightclub they're going to be in. Hold on. Is this it? Yeah, this is it. I think this is it.
You made me think you cared for me, and I believed in you. You told me things you never meant, and made me think them true. I gambled in the game of life. I played my heart and lost. I'm now a wreck upon life's sea. Alone I pay the cost. You made me what I am today. I hope you're satisfied. You dragged and dragged me down until the soul within me died. You shattered each and every dream. You fooled me from the start. And though you're not true, may God bless you. That's the curse of an aching heart.
I'd like to find out what the name of that singer is, you know. He's probably like, I wonder if he's well known, or maybe he was just some extra who, not an extra, but just a bit player who, you know, obviously sang, but let me see. That is so fucking funny, man. I want to use that in the show. You know, I want to use that as a... You showed me what... you cared for me. I'd use that for a Ted Bell, you know, like the Dunphy brothers. One of the Dunphy brothers has come in.
I don't know, Phil. He wants to sing.
What is this? Experiencing interruptions. No. No, I'm not. May God bless you. That kind of exaggerated vibrato, is that what it's called? When they do that? That exaggerated style. I hear it even in some modern singing. Like Bruce Springsteen's Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And he affects it because of the 1960s they did it. And he's a big, you can tell Springsteen's heavily influenced by R&B and rock singers from the 60s. He said, like, Santa Claus is coming to town. That kind of thing. The Ronettes. I think he was influenced by the Ronettes. You know. Like walking in the rain. I think they did a little bit of that shit. I don't know. But Springsteen, obviously, the Wall of Sound is like a major influence on him because he uses it, or uses something that sounds a little bit like that. Okay, enough of my bullshit. You made me what I am today. I hope you're satisfied. All right. The soul within me died. This Friday night, it's poutine night, isn't it? Yeah. Tomorrow night. Or tonight, yeah. We have something in the store, and it's very rarely purchased, but we have a thing in the store where I will do a 15-minute show based around your family, your life, and the stuff that you want, you know, like people send us, you know, information about their family, about what's happening, and we put it in the store, as a matter of fact, right when all the shit hit the fan in August. So it was like, oh, fuck, you know, I had all this stuff. Plus, we had all these liners to do, voice liners to do for people who were took advantage of the offer and the promotion. We were going to do a voice liner for you if you got a year subscription. So now I have these shows that I got to get one knocked out this weekend. I have got to fucking get it knocked out. I'm going to. May God bless you. That's the curse of an aching heart.
Phil, I gotta tell you, the Dunphys are here. They're here, and they're hopping mad. Well, Phil, I got to tell you, the Dunphys are here, and they're not going anywhere. They're not leaving. They expect from me, the Dunphys want me to do it. I don't know what is going on, but the Dunphys expect me to, Timmy Dunphy wants to get up and...
These Dunphys, they run your restaurant.
No, they don't run my restaurant.
Yes, they do, Bill. They tell you...
Is it Jerry, Larry Dunphy wants to get up and do a song, so we're going to go ahead and let him do that. I don't know. It's not a big thing with me.
You made me think you cared for me, and I believed in you.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen.
You told me things you never meant, and...
Yeah.
Step inside, and I'm short.
Stan, just before the nightclub singer comes out, Stan's wife, who found out that they stole... that he went out to just get drunk, even though they stole a bottle of tea. She poured out the booze and put tea in there. She's pissed off because he went out with Ollie. So they're at this club thinking they're drinking booze and it's actually just tea, but they're getting hammered on it psychologically. Listening to this fucking guy. And meanwhile, she's at a gun. She's gone to a gun store and she's bought a fucking shotgun. guy goes, let me take you inside and show it to you. She goes, and I want a box of shells, too. She's going to come into the fucking nightclub where they're drinking and just pow. Let them have it, I guess. When I had, I was going through real serious, like, endogenous biochemical depression in the early 80s. Not relative to anything happening in my life. It was biochemical. It was the first time I realized that I had that. And I had just turned 30. Actually, I just turned 31. I didn't know what the fuck was wrong with me, man. But the only thing that gave me, and thank God I had a job in those days. I was doing voiceover for Westwood One. And it required only a couple of days a week that I go in and do liners for shows. Basically, that's all I was doing, you know. And I, wow. And then I go home and I was just, and the only thing that gave me any joy at all was watching Laurel and Hardy. I'd sit there and just watch these Laurel and Hardy movies over and over and over again. It's right when video stores had come into their own around 83, I think. So that's where you went to get videos, and that's, you know, there was no digital at that point. There was nothing like that at all. Cable TV was extremely rudimentary. It was just cable channels. We had Showtime. We had HBO. We had Cinemax. As I remember, Showtime was the one that I had, and was really kind of shitty. And I really wanted HBO, but they didn't offer it on my cable. I had Cinemax. Then I had ESPN. I had MTV. Then I think I got Encore, maybe? Or Starz, one of those. And then the other thing that we had that was very novel, which is common now, were the superstations. We had TBS, WGN out of Chicago. TBS had a lot of old rerun shows and shit. And then I would have this VCR that cost me $900 fucking. $900 for this VCR that I had that also was a video recorder. And I had a camera. I had this rig that was huge. That I would go around and just film shit like my friends golfing and stuff. Just goofy shit. And that's what I had, man. And I would, I did a lot of goofy shit myself. Just, you know, sketches and stuff, but beyond that, man, you know, I was like just not good. And the only thing that I remember sitting there watching Laurel and Hardy, and it just picked me right up, man. Took me right out of where I was. And what I did is I finally went to the doctor, had a full physical, couldn't find a thing wrong with me. Finally, my therapist decided that I was suffering from depression, and I went to a psychiatrist to get the prescription, because a psychiatrist is a medical doctor and they can prescribe meds. And I got this prescription for these meds, and it was the worst shit in the world. The doctor that I went to prescribed me some stuff that it slowed me down, it made me sleepy. It was completely fucked, and I think about after 2-3 weeks, I threw it all down the fucking shitter. And I decided what I would do is, you know, sort of half-ass a treatment for myself. And what it entailed was whatever, you know, really worked for me was exercise. So I went out, I started riding my bike, you know, 20 miles a day, which really helped a lot. And I read up on diet. I got rid of sugar and all that shit. I started eating this blood sugar type salad that I found in one of the many books I was reading to balance my blood sugar. And you know what? It started to work really well. So that's really what happened, man. I mean, that's kind of from 1983 until the early 2000s, 20 fucking years, man. I went without any meds at all. Now, I take some, like, Wellbutrin. That's kind of a little bit of a speed, and it's also, you know, keeps you from smoking. Although, I got to tell you, I don't think I need it. I will never, ever smoke. again. As much as I miss it sometimes, and I do, I will never smoke again. Because all I got to do is remember laying there, hearing that alarm go off because I wasn't getting enough oxygen. People tell me, take deep breaths, Phil. Really get the air in there, you know, and taking deep breaths and then coughing like a motherfucker. Every time I took a deep breath, I'm hacking like a son of a bitch. I couldn't get up and move 1 foot without coughing my guts up. Just that little bit of movement there, I would be coughing my guts up. Getting up and going to the bathroom was a major fucking disaster, you know. Not a disaster, it was a major hassle. And then one time, you know, halfway through my stay in the hospital, I can't stand it any longer. I needed a shower. I really wanted a fucking shower. So I got up, I unplugged myself, and went in and took a shower. And, oh, my God, I just coughed and coughed and coughed and coughed. You know, just the mere function of just trying to run some hot water on myself and some soap and just... Because I couldn't take it, man. I couldn't smell myself, to be honest with you, but I couldn't imagine anybody that could smell me that it was any good. I remember seeing the doctor. He said, Jesus, when am I getting out of here? And, well, now, Phil, you know, he was trying to tell me, you know, it's a tsunami, man. It's a wave that's crashing over you. So finally, on that Saturday, 1 week I was in there, and they said, well, you can leave. I think I'd beat the infection, etc., but walking to the car that day, walking out of the hospital that day, I didn't think I was going to make it. And Barry was out here, and I said, you got to go get the car. I can't walk to it, you know. So I stood at the front door of the hospital. She went and got her car and brought it around, and or I think it was my car, and... thus began the beginning of the end of no more cigarettes. I had quit smoking on the 26th of December, 2009. What I'm talking about now is well into the month of January. Man. Phew. So 2009, 16. Coming 7 years. This coming Christmas, 7 years without a cigarette. And I smoked for 43 years. The time I was 14 until the time I just turned 57. 43 fucking years I smoked cigarettes. I mean, I really am, I'm grateful that I got sick because I wasn't going to quit, man. And you know, when I got sick that week, there was a lot of work. One of the things that we were doing, we just rolled out a new website. You know, we'd rolled out a new design. We were now doing video casts. Our business was beginning to do one of these because we got the new site online and people were excited about it and we were really getting a lot of business, a lot of subscribers, a lot of new BSPs. And then I decided on that Christmas I would do a Christmas carol, you know, play all the parts. And then I did it again. I reprised it, although I think I played the recording. And then I got sick. And I was smoking three fucking packs. Three packs a day. Man. And that's when I just looked at that cigarette and I went, you told me that you cared for me. And then I just threw it across the street, you know. And I believed in you. Volunteer group. Who's in Aleppo? In Aleppo, Syria? Is it the Red Cross and who else? If I wasn't doing this, I would go down there, man, volunteer, do something. People are getting their fucking asses pounded. This is what happens. This is what despotic regimes, and just being in a part of the world where there is a struggle over the political hegemony, resources. I mean, this is the reality of life, and this is the reality of societies. From the beginning of time, there has been this struggle back and forth between stronger and weaker societies and the ideologies that control them. And every fucking day of the week, the people that are caught in the middle are the ones that suffer. And there's always going to be people caught in the middle. That's why you have to take control of the reins of control of your society, of your country, or you're dead. If you are at the mercy of a autocracy, you can't ever trust a leader to lead you the right way. You can never, man. That's why we have the democracy that we have. You know, two terms, your ass is out of there, man. You know, two-party system, whatever the fuck. People are saying that that's a failure, but I don't know. You made me think you cared for me, and I... All right, Larry Grover and Ted Bell. So we've got a situation here. Where am I at? 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 Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney is Secretary of State. Well, that's the Abraham Lincoln model, you know, the team of rivals. That was Abraham Lincoln's book. Doris Goodwin's book. And, you know, we interviewed her here, and it's a great book. You should read it. It's called Team of Rivals, and it's about Abraham Lincoln's ability to bring into his administration all of these people that had formerly been his sworn political enemies when he was running for president. Every one of those guys in his cabinet. He ran against William Seward. He ran against Salmon Chase, who was the Secretary of the Treasury. All of these guys, in one way or another, were political rivals. And Lincoln recognized their genius. Edwin Stanton was a political rival of his in Ohio. Edwin Stanton was very disrespectful to Abraham Lincoln. Thought he was a big fucking dumb ape. Now, what am I doing here, man? Yeah. And I believed in you. And I believed in you. What is this, Larry Grover? Okay. Ellicott, the next step is having a meeting at Wampaw University. They're on their way to Hawaii. God, it's going to be a year. A year's coming up since Lauren and I went to Hawaii last year. It was a shitty fucking vacation. It really was. And it's all my fault because I picked a bad hotel. I'd never stayed in this place. It had a 5-star recommendation as a resort. And by that, I mean it had spas and all kinds of shit, you know. It was right there on the beach. I even looked at, the grounds, took a look at the ground, you know. I mean, it was voted the number one fucking resort spa hotel in Hawaii. It must have been some jive-ass fucking, I think it was Condé Nast, though. I mean, it was, and I went to this place, and it was crowded. The beach was fucking packed, you know. I mean, it was completely the opposite of anything that I would want for flying 3,000 fucking miles to the tropics. Understood that, you know, it was Hawaii, so I get it. It's a state, but still, all right, I'll talk to you about it later. Bobby and Steve. I got Ted Bell. Okay, and then Bobby and Steve are where? In the gym. I'm usually pretty good at picking out hotels, too. I usually have a pretty good sense for those things. I mean, I turned a lot of my friends on to places they didn't know anything about, and we still go back to these places. But so what's up, baby? Are you back inside now, Thunder? May God bless you. Ice Cube's got a song called No Vaseline. How did I miss that one? From Death Certificate?
Damn. Forgot to do something. Let me see. Oh, yeah. It ain't over, motherfuckers.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Test 1, 2, 3.